What is emotion? What is its role? And what is it here to do?
To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourself and the relationship with others, finding our stability in our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships? We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships. Rachel McGinty is a PACFA accredited psychotherapist and yoga teacher. Nestled in the heart of Crow's Nest right next to me, Rachel operates her own private practice where she specializes in fostering self-awareness and promoting embodied empowerment through her unique approach to therapy. With a profound commitment to individual growth and transformation, Rachel engages in one-on-one sessions with clients, guiding them on a journey towards self-discovery and personal development. Her therapeutic methods seamlessly integrate traditional psychotherapy techniques with the holistic principles of yoga, creating a comprehensive and enriching experience for her clients. Rachel's particular passion lies in the realm of relationships. She believes in the interconnectedness of our relationships with others, with oneself, with our environment, and with the divine. All right, welcome back to the podcast. I'm super excited to be joined by the yogi therapist, Rachel, today. How are you doing, Rach?
I am so good. I am so excited to be with you. We had a chat last week and the conversation flowed. It was fun. It was nerdy and juicy and delicious. So I'm so fucking ready for round two. Sorry, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast, but
yeah, look, yeah, you know you could swear. I was dropping bombs last week, so that's all good. Yeah, bring it on. I think the more authentic, the better, you know? We'll see what that kind of comes with.
Drop some F-bombs left, right, and center.
Yeah. So, Rach, who the hell are you and what do you do?
I am the yogi therapist. So I am a psychotherapist, a PACFA registered psychotherapist and counselor, and I'm also a yoga teacher. And so my passion, my dharma, my calling in life is to bring these two practices together. What I found when I was studying my master's was that so much of the things that we are taught in therapy, especially around trauma, but also around mindfulness and self-awareness and embodiment, are practices that have been available to us for 4,000 years through yoga. And so I am really, really dedicated to bringing these two practices together to allow people to help them to get a better understanding of the nature of their mind and their body, and for them to be able to create a life that's worth being present for. You know, I remember when I was learning a lot about drugs and alcohol, at the heart of it was that their life was too painful to be present to. So they numb themselves out so they don't have to engage with and experience the pain that they have every day. And so, I want to help people to set up their relationships, set up their work, set up their relationship to themselves and their body so that when that alarm goes off at 7 a.m., it's like, fuck yeah, I get to be me again today. Sick. Because that really genuinely is my experience of life. And I've experienced it in other ways. And I, you know, from this side of the journey, I think, you know, I want to leave the door open and help people to come and experience that for themselves. So that's who I am. I have my own private practice in Crow's Nest. I teach yoga at a number of studios in Sydney. And yeah, that's me.
Lovely. I'm yet to do a face-to-face podcast, but if anyone was going to do it, it would be you. I can probably see your office from here.
I know, we're Crow's Nest. I don't know why everyone who went to ACUP ended up in Crow's Nest, but it's nice. We can have a little reunion at lunchtime between clients. Yeah.
True. Yeah, well, I love that. I think that what you're doing is what
people are really trying to do a lot of the time, but don't really understand how to do it. You know, they think emotions are these big words, only words that we've kind of learned what they mean through maybe through experiences or whatever, but the whole body-mind connection thing is so disconnected a lot of the time in our societies. And I think people trying to, you know, like you, but like I guess lots of other therapists that maybe don't have that, like quite that background in I guess the yogi way, struggle to kind of go, how do I get someone who doesn't understand their emotions to understand them and then realize, oh yeah, and also it's all about what you what's in your body and what your body is experiencing as well. And I think that connection and really aligning that is really what I believe, and I know that you feel the same way, is that's what where the real kind of healing and recovery and I guess growth happens, is when we connect those two things together, the mind and body, and actually release and understand and stay aligned with what actually it feels like in the body.
I mean, I've also had the experience of being really disconnected from my body and quite fractured. I first went to therapy myself when I was 11. My parents broke up and my mum, in her infinite wisdom, took me and all my siblings to therapy just to make sure we were kind of processing the divorce okay. And
Preach, I did the same thing.
And it was, do you know what? I had the most amazing experience. I remember I went in, you know, to talk about my parents' new divorce, but what I ended up talking about was this dynamic I was in with my brother. So my brother was my older brother and he was everything to me. I was just, he could do no wrong. I just wanted to play with him. I wanted him to like me. And so my strategy as an 11-year-old was, if I want to be close to him, go and invade his space, like go and physically jump on him, tackle him, get his attention. And I remember my therapist telling me, my first ever session, she got a whiteboard out and she drew two people and she drew a line in the middle. And she's like, you know, when people are friends or they want to be close or have a relationship, they need to come towards one another halfway. Now, if you cross that line and you go into his space, he has no choice but to pull away. And what happens when he pulls away? You go and close the space. And then you're off in this, you know, you're chasing him around trying to close the space. In fact, if you want him to come towards you, what you need to do is pull back and allow him to meet you halfway. Now, that's so obvious to me now, right? I'm 28. The idea that annoying the shit out of someone is not going to make them want to hang out with you is very self-evident. But at the time, I was like, oh my God, this is revolutionary. And I just became obsessed. I was like, she told me something about myself and about human nature that gives me more power in my life. Cool. I want this relationship. This is how I can get it. And from then on, I knew that I was born to be a therapist. I said, I don't know who she is. She's a witch. She has some kind of secret power because every time I walk away from her, I feel amazing. But whoever she is, that's who I want to be. And I never veered from that. Yeah. At the age of 11, I knew I wanted to be a therapist. As soon as I finished school, straight into uni, psychology, philosophy, my master's. But I also had a similar experience that when I got to my master's, after, you know, years of being obsessed with the theory side of psychology, you know, I read all the books. I had all of the intellectual knowledge, you know, an undergrad, a bachelor of psychology is rats and stats. It's very theoretical. It's very, very intellectual. And I remember I got to my master's. We had this one teacher. Did you ever have Sally?
Yeah, I did actually.
She's brutal, right? Like in the best way, but she takes no shit. And I remember she asked for a volunteer to come up to do a live session. And I'm like, oh yeah, I have this really funny story that I can tell everyone. I mean, it's not funny. It's actually really, I mean, I got cheated on. It was really dramatic. And I was like, let me entertain people with this story. I've already been to therapy and worked through it, but I'm going to tell them like this wild story. Cause it was wild. This guy ended up, you know, being a total narcissist and a wild liar, like ended up he was married and had kids back in another country kind of thing, right? So I was like, let me go in and entertain the people. And I sit in this chair and she's like, you know, what would you like to talk about? And I'm like, well, you know, I've got this story, you know, I was dating this guy and it turns out he, you know, he was cheating on me the whole time. He was never who I thought he was. And the whole time I'm telling it, I'm kind of laughing and really verbose and exaggerated with my expression. And I guess I was probably looking for a response. I wanted to see the shock on people's face. And she just says to me, you know, halfway through, she's like, "Do you notice that you're not breathing very deeply right now?" And I was like, "No, what do you mean?" And she's like, "And your chest is going red." And I was like, And she's like, "You know, you're telling me this really deeply traumatic story, and you're presenting as though it's funny, but it's not funny. There's a lot of betrayal in that, and I think you're disconnected from that sense of betrayal." And I was like, no, I've come to peace with it. You know, I've been to therapy. You know, it is who he is. It had nothing to do with me." And she's like, "You're hurt and you're angry." Mm. And immediately I just like choked up and I panicked, because I was like, my plan was to come up here and entertain 30 people with my hilarious story.
Yeah.
Hilarious in air quotes.
Yeah.
And now I'm actually feeling really vulnerable, and I just started to cry. And I looked down and I said, "Sally, what do I do?" And she's like, "Cry. Feel what you're feeling." And I had no idea what she meant. I was like, "How do I feel what I'm feeling?" And she's like, "Well, I'm going to stop there. Let's not do this here." But like, it just made me realize that I was so disconnected from my body, that I had processed things intellectually and made sense of them, but my body was still carrying this deep amount of anger. And it was interesting, because any time I would drink, I would go out with my friends, I would get so aggressive, you know, I'd yell and I would push, and I was, you know, I was, and then I'd wake up and be like, "Who the hell was that? Like, where did that come from?" But really what it was is all this anger that was never getting any attention finally had a way out, and it would come out in the extreme. And so from there, I had to do a lot of unlearning and relearning of actually processing things, not only in my mind, but in my body and in my emotions and starting to reconnect. So I've been there, and now I'm so, you know, I love helping people to do the same, because I think it's so freeing and deeply connecting and makes life so much richer.
Mm. Wow, I love that, and feel very, you know, I guess drawn to like no more, and yeah, I guess like can see that emotional part of it, where it's so easy to say a story sometimes, not all the time, and hide behind, you know, what's kind of actually going on underneath it, and then using that as a tool to make sure that I don't get vulnerable and I still don't let this have power over me anymore. But that's like a mindset, right? There's a big mindset around that. And I think that today, I mean, some people might just think listening to us talk is therapy for them, which maybe we're pretty therapeutic, but like, it's not, you know?
I would like to think so.
Right.
Yeah. No.
And people are reading Instagram quotes, and people are reading, you know, or watching reels around lots of different stuff, or they're reading the self-help books as well. And maybe they're going to therapy too, and making sense of it in their mind around a lot of these things. But at the end of the day, it's like, people are like, "Oh, I'm still stuck," or then I get into a relationship and it all kind of still unravels, or something brings me back to like, shit, I thought this was gone. Or we stay so sure that we've worked through it. Like, I guess, you know, maybe part of that was for you. It's like, "I'm all through it. I'm good." And it's not out of resistance or denial sometimes. It's literally like, I didn't know that there was a body
part
of this
component.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. I think, you know, sometimes we trick ourselves, and like you said, not in a malicious way, but we think that thinking about things and intellectually processing them is the work, and it is, and there is more work to be done on top of it. You know, having awareness is an essential piece of this process, but it is not sufficient. It is, it's necessary, but not sufficient. So you need that awareness, but the awareness so that you can go and then physically do the work. You know, for example, you and I might be really good friends, and, you know, you make a comment. I can go away and sit with why that comment really frustrated me. It made me feel invalidated. It tapped into this sense of insecurity. It reminds me of my brother, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. What am I going to do about it? If I sit here and just identify, great,
understand,
but I need to go and have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
I need to say, hey, Jackson, and learn the language of communication so that I can actually integrate what I've learned in my mind into my life, because things not being said, things not being done in our life cause so much pain in the body. And your body, unfortunately, doesn't give a shit about what you think. You know, it has its own wisdom. It has its own intelligence and its own needs. And that is to be expressed, felt, moved, and acknowledged. Yeah. And so when we learn to do that part, to do the second part, to follow through, that's when we really step into our power.
I feel a little tingly now. You know, this is nice. So I guess to help people understand this a little bit more, and I use me as an example, because up here, and I'm pointing to my big old noggin, my brain, it's safer up there a lot of the time because I can stay here, right? I can stay in thought, even when it's crazy thought, like it's overthinking or whatever, it's still processing in a way of going, I'll intellectualize my way through this. I'll find a decision. I'll find a resolution if I stay in the mind. So for me, it's very safe up here, and I'm very good at it, right? What I struggle with and always have struggled with, obviously, you know, I've done a lot of work now, so it is very different. But I imagine a lot of people sitting and listening to this are in a similar boat, where it's the, you know, the default is still the thinking way, you know, thinking through it. So starting to kind of come from mind to heart, you know, head to emotions, I guess I find more difficult to keep coming back and letting myself drop into it. And you know, if we're talking to like 10 years ago me, what does that actually even look like to start with? Get the hell out of your head, you know?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because I think, yeah, there's for sure probably some people that listen to this resonate and go, okay, now what? And I think the first thing is to acknowledge that perhaps we've misunderstood what it means to be a human. I love something that Brené Brown says, which is that, you know, we often think of ourselves as these rational thinking beings that have emotion, that primarily our brain and our thought process and our intellect runs the show. But if that's how we're seeing ourselves, we've misunderstood and we're not acknowledging our evolution, which is this prefrontal cortex thing, this whole brain, rational, intellect thing is new in terms of evolution. Yeah. This shit only came online in the last tens of thousands of years. Where we came from was being these really much like animals, instinctual beings. You know, dogs don't necessarily think. They react, they feel, they have these nervous systems. And so it's actually more accurate to see us as emotional, instinctual beings that have the ability to think, right? And so we need to acknowledge that we are fundamentally emotional beings and to acknowledge that. Now, what you said was so bang on. It is so much safer to be up in our head, because what happens is we feel a lot. When you think about a baby, babies feel everything. They cry, they yell. Toddlers will kick and punch, and they're very, very physical. They're very connected to their emotion. Now, what happens is if we learn that having the emotion was unsafe, right? If our parents told us, you know, you go to your room until you calm down, and when you calm down, you can come back. You know, we learn, oh, my anger is not accepted here.
Yeah.
Or if we are left alone with the emotion. You know, if you think about a kid that didn't have emotionally available parents, and this kid felt sad and hurt and no one was there to help guide them through it, because feeling sad and hurt is really hard. And if it becomes too overwhelming, we will retreat from our body and go up into our head because it's safer. Because when we are talking about emotion, we are talking about the body. You know, if I said to you, can you explain what anxiety feels like? What you would say is racing heart, sore stomach, sweating palms. You're telling me something physical that's happening. It's the same with love. It's the same with excitement. It's the same with joy. We're talking about physiological states.
Yeah.
So if these physiological states become too overwhelming and we're like, nah, I can't handle this, I will go up into my brain and I will think about everything. But what that means is we think about our life rather than feel it, rather mm-hmm. than live it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that that means is we're not able to solve our problems very well because we can't think our way out of a feeling problem.
Yeah.
Right. You need to speak the language of your body, of your nervous system, in order to get any kind of resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So if people mm-hmm. want to get to the work, acknowledge that, let that be true.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it would be some mindfulness and notice what happens to your body. You know, when someone cuts you off in traffic, which is something that's probably bound to happen in the next 24 hours, what happens? What stories do you tell yourself? What happens to your body? When your partner comes home late from work and doesn't tell you, what happens? Watch and notice where your baseline is. Notice the tendency where you numb, where you justify, where you shut down, where you explode. Just know what you're working with to start. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we can't think our way through feelings, right? We can try.
Mm-hmm.
We can try and try and try and try and try. And I guess it's the same when we get into conversation or conflict, dialogue with someone that we care about, right? Where it rational and logical thought with their emotional and vulnerable space, we're going to miss every time.
We're going to disconnect from them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't fight rationality with emotionality, right? It just doesn't really work and it's a lose-lose. So being able to kind of navigate, well, how do I drop in to be here with you, to connect here with you? Takes a lot of work, takes a lot of skill. And yeah, you're totally right. I think it really does start with how do I start to recognize what goes on? And I think it's interesting you say, like, how would you describe anxiety and, you know, racing heart, butterflies in the tummy, you know, whatever that might be. A lot of the time people can't even get to there, right? It's like, I don't know.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or they go, I just start overthinking. I start having,
having racing they don't have thoughts the language.
And that the language kind of not there. And obviously this is where I love, the yoga influence is how do I start bringing in this idea that I've got this thing below my head that calls a lot of the shots and sometimes desperately tries to tell me what's going on. I've just got to start to figure out how I'm going to listen. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know what, you're bang on, because there are times where I try and do some stuff with clients and I say to them, what do you mean by anxiety? How do you know? What does that feel like? And they genuinely don't know. Mm. And so I realize, okay, they're so disconnected from their body. They don't have the language. That's fine. Let's pull back one step. Let's just start connecting to our body before we connect to our emotions. And so it'll be really basic stuff like a body scan. You know, can you sit there and feel your feet on the floor? Can you notice the sole of your foot connected to the earth? Is there more pressure in your heel than the front of your foot? How do your feet feel being in the shoe? Is it tight? Is it spacious? You know, whatever. And so a body scan meditation is going to be your homework for the next probably a few weeks, if not months. Start to feel your right finger. Start to feel, your right finger, your right thumb. Start to feel your pinky. Can you feel the space between them, right? So just starting to train that awareness back into the body, and then we can start to go, okay, now let's think about feeling your stomach. Let's think about feeling energy in the body. So for sure, if you have no idea what is happening in your emotions, peel back, start with your body. And exercise can be great for that as well, you know. Go for a run. You'll feel that shit, I promise.
Yeah, totally. So what I guess a lot of the time what people want to know is I want to be able to figure out how to deal with my emotions. And you know, you're pointing all the signs towards, you know, we need to start understanding our body and listening to it. But even just like, you know, I'd love to kind of talk to you about this in what I find really interesting is that we our body's trying to regulate itself the whole time, you know, while we're talking right now. Unconsciously, but now I'm conscious of it. Unconsciously, I'm fiddling my fidget anxiety ring, you know, and I'm just twisting it and twisting it and twisting it. You know, I'm quite comfortable, or I might, you know, shift and move, and I'm obviously breathing and whatever. And as I start to notice that, you know, I can amplify it even more and emphasize it. You know, that's going to help me ground even more. Mm. You know, and now I'm bringing my attention to the fact that I'm, you know, fiddling my fidget ring and kind of, you know, got my feet on the ground. But my body just does a lot of this stuff by itself a lot of the time. And even, I guess, being able to start to recognize that is something that's really, really interesting to go, like, what does it do when it's freaking out that you're not even that conscious of? Mm-hmm. If we become conscious of, where it can actually help speed up the process to slow us down. Does that kind of make
sense? Yeah, it does make sense.
Yeah.
I think we have got to a point, especially in the West, where we moralize. I'm not sure if that's a word, but we're going to make it a word. We moralize our emotions. So what I mean by that is we put them into the binary of good or bad. I want to feel joy. I want to feel excited. I want to feel horny. I want to feel connected. I want to feel satiated. I don't want to feel grief. I don't want to feel jealousy, exhaustion, sadness, anguish, blah, blah, blah. And so we tend to want to like capitalize and create more positive emotions. Yeah. And again, that was in air quotes. Mm. And we want to minimize the bad emotions. And I think let's step back. What is emotion? What is its role? And what is it here to do? Now, emotion, first and foremost, is data. Mm. Emotion is the body, the limbic system's way of communicating to your brain. It's telling you, hey, a threat might be nearby. You need to prepare and move into action. Or, hey, this person is safe. You should get closer to them and maximize the amount of time you spend with them. Hey, this person would be a good match as a romantic partner. I'm going to send your body some signals to let them know that you should procreate with them. Hey, I think my boss is going to fire me. You should prepare yourself, XYZ, right? It's constantly trying to talk to us and push us into action. And what it does is it wants our attention and not necessarily our action. So what I mean by that, Jackson, imagine that you and I are roommates, right? And you are in your bedroom. You are doing work for Find Reason Therapy. You've got your laptop on your bed and you've got some soundproof headphones on editing this podcast. Now you've locked your door because you're like, I need to get my work done. And meanwhile, I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking. I'm not a very good cook. And so then like a little fire starts, some oil jumps out onto the gas burner. And I'm like, oh, it's small, right? And I'm like, okay, I think this is manageable. I can try and put it out. Now I try and put it out and it's not working. So because I'm a good roommate, I want to let you know that there's a fire in the kitchen. I think it's probably manageable. I think I could just, hey, Jackson, there's a fire, but I'm going to quickly put it out just to prepare you. So I go up on to your room and I knock on your door. Now, if you hear me knock and you acknowledge me and you say, hey, what's up? I can say, hey, just let you know there's a fire. I think it's under control, but we might need to evacuate. Now, what that's done is that I now know that you might be in danger. And I trust that you can respond. I trust that if we need to get up and go, you know that, right? I don't need to look after you. You're now responsible. But what happens if I bang on your door and it's locked and your soundproof headphones are so tight that you can't hear me? I go, fuck, he doesn't know he's in danger. This fire could get out of control and he's not going to have any idea until it's too late. So if I'm a good friend, what am I going to do? I'm going to bang harder on your door. I'm going to be like, dude, like, let me in, listen. And if that doesn't happen, I'm going to smash down your door because this is life or death. Mm. Now, our emotions have the same quality. When we acknowledge what it is that they're trying to tell us, they soften because their job is done. If we ignore them, they have to amplify to tell us. So if you think about anxiety, right? Anxiety is trying to tell you that there is a threat nearby. If I try and push that down and say, you're such a drama queen, you know, just breathe it away. It's not that big of a deal. You always do this. That anxiety is not feeling spoken to, or sorry, it's not feeling listened to. Mm. And so it's going to ramp up. Now, if I say to you, hey, I see you. I know that you're scared. Thank you so much for letting me know. I appreciate that you've got my back and you're looking out for me. Then that anxiety will soften. So it's about learning to have a different relationship to your emotions and being, you know, rather than seeing them as the enemy that gets in the way, see them as a part of yourself that's trying to help. Sometimes, you know, once we get to a point where we're really connected to our emotions, they can be wiser than us. You know, I don't know if you've ever had like a gut feeling where you're like, everyone loves this person. Everyone tells me I should love this person, but this person makes me feel, I feel like a disconnection. I feel a hesitation. And then months later, we find out that that person was like full of shit and, you know, a total con man or whatever. It's, you know, our body, if we really finely tune the system, it can be deeply wise. So can we work to be on the same team as our emotions and engage with them from a place of curiosity and openness, much like parts work?
Well, it's so nice, because even just the way that you explain it all is like calming. You know, it's so helpful, and then calming too. So I feel like, you know, it helps me stay sort of present to even take it all in, which is really lovely. And I think that's really important when we're trying to, even with ourselves. And I guess that's kind of what you're saying, is that if we change the relationship with it, like you were just talking about anxiety and talking about it really calmly and, you know, saying it's okay and I got you, as opposed to this where it's like, oh my God, we're talking about anxiety. There's a fire in the freaking house. Let's get the fuck out of here. You know, like it's way more, you know, banging on the door, being like, we don't have a very good relationship here. So all I know is that we need to quickly get you out of this because you're terrible at actually listening to me. So just, let's just quickly jump into action. But really, like you said, it wants some attention. It's an alert system, I guess, is kind of what I hear you saying.
That's exactly, absolutely. Yep. I would love to actually, if you're open, to guide you through a really, really short practice that people can do. And I just want to use you as an example. Sorry. If you were open to that.
Yeah. I mean, I could go get Jeff. He's normally the guy we use for this. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it with me. Okay. So just in terms of, you know, you were saying that you were fidgeting. Do you feel any anxiety now? How are you feeling?
I think I run on my baseline has a slight hum of anxiety that runs through it majority of the time. I think my ADHD definitely comes into play with some of that. So my anxiety scoring, it's always difficult. But I'm pretty chill. I'm pretty relaxed. But I guess it's probably like a 1 or 2 out of 10.
Awesome. Would you mind if we have a look at that? Just to show people a really practical process that they can do?
Yeah.
Awesome. Alrighty. Well, I'm going to get you to shut your eyes down to start. And this is where the yoga teacher comes out. We're going to do, I'll drop into my yoga teacher voice.
Right.
So eyes. I want you to get nice and comfortable in your chair and just shut your eyes down. And just take a moment to really arrive into your seat. To feel the soles of your feet resting on the floor, to feel your back leaning into the chair, being really held and supported. Start to feel a softening through the belly. And if there's any tension residing in the face, can you allow the teeth in the back of your jaw to separate? Allow all of the tiny micro muscles keeping your eyes shut to just soften. And as we land into our body, maybe for the first time today, can you just search for your breath? You don't need to change it. Just notice the gentle lift and expansion of the inhale. The softness of the exhale. Just starting to slow us down, to connect us to our body, just anchor that awareness inward. I'm going to ask you a few questions and I want you to keep your eyes shut down, but just speak and answer aloud if it comes up for you. I want you to start to scan your body. And just notice where that anxiety resides. Can you locate where in your body it is?
Just above my belly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you connect to that sensation, as you notice it, can you notice the quality of that sensation? Does it feel like anything?
Feels heated, some warmth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it have a weight? Is it light and airy? Is it heavy?
Mm. Yeah, I guess a little bit of weight.
Mm-hmm. Does it look like anything? Is there an image or a shape that arises when you look at it?
It's like a red smudge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This warm, heavy red smudge sitting in your belly. Yeah. Now I want you to just spend the next few moments just watching it. You don't need to do anything to it. You know, just like you're looking at a piece of art, can you just take a step back and notice how it lives within you? If it moves, if it morphs, what happens as you watch, if anything?
It's shifted. It shifted. Now it's gone, but it shifted up through my back and into my neck. Just that warm kind of heat comes through. Quite nice, different to the heaviness. But yeah, very aware of it.
So it shifted from a heavy smudge feeling to a warmth that kind of fluidly travels through your body. How do you feel towards this sensation? Do you want to get rid of it? Do you like it? Do you notice that you have a relationship towards it?
I'm just probably aware of it and curious about it and okay with it because it's very small and contained.
Beautiful. Yeah, that place of curiosity and openness. How does it feel towards you?
Hmm. I guess the first thing that came to my head is that it wants me to do something with it, you know? It's like it wants my
attention. Could you let it know that you're here and that you're paying attention? Whatever way feels right, you can just say that internally. That you're listening.
Yeah.
Can you ask it if there is something that it wants you to know or that it needs from you?
Just consciousness, I think.
Stay present, yeah. Could you ask it what it's worried would happen if it didn't do what it does? If it didn't show up in your body as this hot, heavy smudge?
I guess taking over. Worried it would take over and kind of flood. The unknown, right?
Can you say more about that? What happens when the system gets flooded with the unknown?
I guess if I stay really hot, I become more reactive and impulsive and flustered. So it can go into a overdrive or overwhelm.
Right. Yeah. So there's been times in your life prior where your system gets flooded, you become impulsive and reactive. You're probably not the version of yourself that you aspire to be. And so it stays as this mellow hum in your stomach to keep you present to this potential. Be on top of it. How does that feel to hear?
It's nice to have that sort of connection to it rather than the alternative of, you know, we're not mates and, you know, we butt heads sort of thing. So it's nice to be more connected.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it has your best interests at heart. It knows that it does, that you don't want to act from that impulsive state. And so it's just trying to keep you aware and mindful not to slip into that state. Do you feel like you'd be able to thank it for what it does for you?
Yeah, I actually just had that grateful thought just before you asked that. So, yeah.
And what happens to it when you express gratitude for what it does?
Nothing, which is great.
Well, whenever you feel ready, can you let it know that you're here to listen whenever it wants your attention, that you're grateful for what it does for you. And then whenever you feel comfortable, whenever you feel ready, you can gently open the eyes and come back to the space. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
How are you feeling?
Nice. Hot. Still. But good.
Yeah, that's so that right there is a way that we can learn to connect to and talk to our feelings. And you'll notice that you haven't done anything in your life. You haven't had to have a conversation with someone or quit your job or cut someone off in traffic. All of that work that you just did was internal, you know, and that was the equivalent of opening the door up and having that conversation with me, who thinks the house is on fire. In the same way that this feeling within you is worried that maybe, you know, the impulsive side of you might take over, and you're saying, hey, thank you so much. I heard you. I know. I'm in control. I got this. And it just softens.
Hmm.
Yeah.
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 Well, I'm very grateful and, glad that that's sort of, we can do an experiential kind of part of this work, and we don't do that all the time in this podcast. So it's always nice to kind of, see what it looks like in process and in furthering the awareness, you know, and actually moving into the doing or being with it instead of just, you know, knowing and understanding. So, yeah. Thanks, Rach.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, when we talk about our emotions and the feelings, I mean, a lot of it will be uncomfortable if it's an uncomfortable emotion. If it's, you know, rather than calling it a negative emotion, I like to say it's a high sensation emotion. You know, it might be rage and my head feels hot and my jaw feels tight and I feel really energized in my chest, and it can be uncomfortable. And if we think about that discomfort and we think about any other pain that we've been through, right, whether we've broken a bone, whether we've cut ourselves, you know, with our hand, cut our hand open in the kitchen, been in a car accident, given birth, whatever, you know, we experience pain. We freaking hit our shins into the side of the bed, right? If we were to put that pain on a scale, you know, the tension in our chest or the jaw, it's probably likely that that discomfort wouldn't register above a 2 or a 3. You know, that this thing that we're really scared to feel, yes, it is uncomfortable for sure, but it's a bearable sensation. You know, it's not like like you've been stabbed in the neck with a knife. It's, oh, I feel tightness in my chest. You can feel tightness in your chest, you know, and it doesn't have to mean anything. Can you just allow your chest to be tight for a while and speak to that tightness? Mm. What do you need from me? What is it that you're worried is going to happen? What can I do?
Mm.
You know, I hear you. I see you. Thank you. And just allow that tightness to be acknowledged.
Yeah. What I really like about somatic work, and I know you do a lot of that, and that was obviously very much like that for people wondering that, I guess, that body work, I guess. But really, really looking at it in a way that's like, yeah, I mean, just being with whatever kind of the experience is, and learning that, you know, this just is, I guess, and that's just part of it. But we're not used to doing that, so we create the unknown around it and the fear around it. So it's like, this is not familiar, so I'm going to stay just distracting, or I'm going to keep moving and not slow down. I think this is what one of the biggest issues in today's age, definitely, as you said, in the West, is we don't really slow down. Not a lot of us slow down to even notice and observe. And I think the more that we can do that, the more we'll actually be able to even listen. I was talking to someone yesterday about this, and it's really like, you put a lot of effort into life, and if that's yin and effortlessness is yang, that there isn't a lot of yang. So it's just this cycle of effort. And you want to get better at being with your emotions. You want to get better at being alone. You want to get better at slowing down or being present or being in a relationship. We need more time, time in, you know, time to actually allow it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need, you know, we need both sides of the coin. You know, I love that you brought up the yin and the yang, because in the yoga tradition, we have our yang practices. So those are like our vinyasa, our hatha, like our really strong practices, lots of standing poses, handstands, backbends, really physically intense. And those are supposed to condition the body. But we also have a yin practice, which is more of a meditative, slow, you sit on the floor and do these long stretches for anywhere from 6 to 10 minutes. And a lot of the times people find more resistance to a yin practice than they do to a yang. They would rather hold a handstand for 10 minutes than to sit with themselves for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we need to have the balance. You know, the people that come to my yin class and they're fidgeting the whole time and they can't sit still and they're checking their watch and they're just, I'm like, you need this more than anything. But then the people who are feeling really disconnected and really, you know, disconnected from their body, they need to go and add some fire. They need to go and move. They need to go and squeeze and engage. And it's so that we can be in balance of being able to be out in the world and to live their life, but to be able to also have that inner peace and that connection inwards, you know, and to not prioritize one over the other, but we need both. It's like me saying to you, hey, Jackson, do you need water or food? And you're like, well, both. You know, we need to slow down, but we also need to be actively engaged in our life. Yeah.
So obviously this podcast is all about connection and self-worth and how we show up in the world. And we end up talking about it a lot, but coming back to self, right? Coming back to connection, not just externally, but mostly internally, and what that can kind of mean. So that we can, you know, put back and give back and show up in whatever it is that we do in the rest of our time. So what do you find the most important aspect of that in your life, in how you come back to connect with you?
Yeah, great question. let me drop
you
in
can
for
say
a
few things, obviously, Rach. There's not one answer, as you know. Maybe a few.
Okay.
The ground
healing my relationship to your body. Yeah, yeah. I think number one is I can go out and I can do couples therapy with my partner, which I do. I can work to be the best friend that I can, and I do. And I can work to be a really good, efficient therapist to my clients, and I do. But there's one relationship that will never change, and that's the relationship I have to myself. And before I love myself or, you know, anything, I want to like myself. I want to be able to think that if I was to meet myself, I'd be like, yeah, she's a cool chick. Like, yeah. I think she's worth it. I would hang out with her again. I think she has interesting things to say. I think she does cool things with her life. I like her. And the number one thing for me to build that, and I did have to build it, was to have integrity. And so what that means is I don't allow myself to do things that are going to make me hate myself. You know, I don't allow myself to gossip and speak shit and then go back and be like, fuck, why have I caused all this drama? Like, why did I jump to that conclusion? My friends are going to be really frustrated at me, or, you know, no, I just don't allow myself to engage. I prioritize looking after my body. I take myself to some kind of movement practice. Some days that's a walk. Some days it's hot yoga. Some days it's Pilates or the gym, but I give a shit about my body because I know how hard it works for me. It digests my food. It pumps the blood around. It hugs my partner. It provides so much for me. So I say thank you by moving it. And I think the last one would be, you know, when I do fall short, when I do slip up and say something nasty, when I haven't got off the couch for 2 weeks, when I don't feel like I've had integrity in alignment with who I want to be, rather than shame myself, I get curious. What happened? What's going on? What made it so difficult for you to move your body? You know, and where can I help you? Oh, okay, you're finding it difficult to move your body because you're not sleeping well. Why aren't you sleeping well? Because, you know, you're addicted to Made in Chelsea and you can't stop watching it till 11 a.m. Okay, what are we going to do? You know, rather than you fucking idiot, you fat piece of shit, get up and go to the gym. It's like, what's stopping you from getting there? You know, I think one of the things I love about psychotherapy is the idea that it is human nature to grow and to seek self-betterment, and getting in our way, you know, we don't need to encourage ourselves to be better. That will be the tendency. And if there's something in the way of it, we need to remove that thing. It's kind of like, you know, if you plant a seed in the ground, If it has the water and the light and the correct nutrition, it will grow into an oak tree, you know? And we need to think about, okay, well, what's stopping me from being an oak tree today? Am I getting enough water? Am I surrounded by good people? Am I making good choices? Okay. You know, I'm on my team. I'm my own therapist.
Yeah,
those would be mine.
I love that. So integrity and really being able to look at that and stay in alignment with that.
Mm.
Thanking your body through movement, which I love. I love that sentence. And then getting curious and going inward to check things out. That's amazing. And really a practice that, you know, I align with and resonate with, very similar sort of thing for me. And I think that being able to continue that reflective part to know today's going to be needing one thing and tomorrow's going to be needing another thing is all part of the circus and chaos that can be our minds and our bodies. But I guess coming back with compassion and curiosity is really nice. So if I keep this flow going, I'll probably slowly drift off into sleep, Rach. You put me into a very nice thing. I've got to do work for the rest of the day. How dare you? How dare you regulate my nervous system? But I'm very, very grateful to have you on. Where can we go if we want, you know, a little bit more of this in our world? Where can we find you and what's on at the moment for you?
So you can find me at theyogitherapist.com.au or theyogitherapist_ on Instagram. Instagram's really going to be the best place to find me. That's usually where I'm most active. I have a TikTok. I never fucking use it, so don't even bother. what else? Right now, I mean, I have a little bit of space for a few new clients. So if you're interested in what I do, feel free to hit me up. But I also run retreats, which help to bring in, you know, these two practices. So it's yoga in the morning and then these kind of workshops in the afternoon there in Bali. It's a week-long deep dive into all this juicy stuff. So if you're interested, again, it's on my website. That, you know, the last one we ran was just divine. So we've got another one coming up in March, April, if anyone is curious.
Me. Yeah, the last one looked so good.
Oh my God. It was just insane. So good.
Yeah. I need to get back to Bali.
And just like immersed right in the Balinese. There's a waterfall. Like we're just immersed right into the rainforest. There's a waterfall and just surrounded by greenery and an infinity pool. And it's just divine. It's so beautiful. Yeah, it's such a healing space. Bali is such a healing space. She's got such a feminine healing essence to her, and I just love going there and recharging. Yeah
And I know that makes sense to you and me, but obviously perspectives of Bali are very different. We're talking about
don't go to Seminyak and Kuta.
We're talking about
I'm talking about like Ubud and Uluwatu. Jesus Christ, no, not what is it, Potato Head Club. No, don't go to Kuta or Seminyak. I'm talking Ubud is like the heart. It's like where all the yoga studios are. It's the real, it's in the mountains. It's in the center. Yeah. It's a spiritual heart. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big energy channel there, which is very great. So cool. But for now, we've got a little bit of that from you over the ditch in Crow's Nest and on this space. So I'll put all that stuff up in our little show notes and on the website. And we will keep in touch and stay connected. I'm so keen to hear both of our podcasts come out. So thank you again. It's really
good chat.
A really good honor to have you here, and I'm feeling pretty grounded. So it's great.
Good come feeling. To yoga. Come to my class. Come to my yin class. I'm serious. I'll send you a link afterwards. It's 60 minutes of yogi Rachel. Just dropping in and talking like this.
Oh, I'll be there. Sounds so good. All right. Thanks, Rach.
Thanks, my love.
How do I do this? Oh, I just press stop. Obviously, it's been a while.
Do you want to find out more about how therapy can help you kick some goals? Go check out findreasontherapy.com.au or the Find Reason Therapy Instagram page.